Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. The incoming Biden administration is expected to usher in many changes, both here at home and abroad. Jim Steinberg joins me today to help us understand what we could expect to see in the international realm. Jim has deep experience and expertise. Among many other positions, he served as Deputy Secretary of State in the Obama administration and Deputy National Security Advisor in the Clinton administration. He's currently a university professor of social science, international affairs, and law at Syracuse University's Maxwell School, where he also served as dean. Jim, welcome to the program, and it's great to have you on.
Great to be here, Grant.
So a departure point for our conversation, I think, is to remind our listeners at the outset that presidents generally have a freer hand in foreign affairs, at least compared to what they do in domestic affairs, and that's true for a variety of reasons. But let's start with the high altitude perspective. Are there any overall approaches that President Biden will take toward international affairs?
You know, I think it's important to recognize at the outset that we know a lot about President-elect Biden's record, about the approach he's taken in the past, both as Vice President of the United States, as a candidate, and as a senator, including chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. But he gets a bit of a fresh start now that he's been elected. And so, as they say in the investment world, past performance is the future. So we need to recognize that he will have a chance to kind of take a deep breath, look at the situation that he inherits, and make some decisions going forward. That having been said, I think the one thing we do know about President-elect Biden is that he strongly believes in the importance of the United States working with others to achieve national interests, and particularly working with like-minded countries that share our values and interests. And so in contrast with President Trump, he's not a person who believes that America is at its best when it goes it alone. That America's best when it is working with others. And I think that's going to be, if you want the 30,000 foot difference, it will be a sense that we don't harm ourselves, we don't hobble ourselves by working with others, we make ourselves stronger.
Do you think that President Biden then, recognizing what you said at the outset about being wary of making these kinds of predictions, but do you think that he will be leery of these series of bilateral deals rather than thinking of coalitions and trade agreements in a multi-country fashion way?
You know, I don't think it's an either or proposition. I mean, I think that there are places where bilateral arrangements are important. We had a number of bilateral arrangements that were reached during the Obama administration when Mr. Biden was vice president. I think it really depends on the context and the circumstances and the particular subject matter. I think what's important, though, is that there's going to be an awareness that this is not just a kind of a real estate deal where one side wins and the other side loses, right? I mean, it's a situation where he's going to be looking for opportunities to work either bilaterally or multilaterally so that both sides win, recognizing that in the long run, that's a better outcome than just a short-term triumph over your negotiating partner.
And you recently said something in a different venue that struck me, and it has stayed with me. Your phrase was, Biden is an internationalist, but not an interventionist. And I'm curious to hear you explain that a bit more here.
So I think the vice president has had a long experience in the Congress. I mean, he really is generationally somebody who, you know, began his career, you know, really in the Vietnam era, and recognizing that that there are risks to the United States for being involved abroad. There are also important interests and stakes, and that one has to be very careful in terms of defining one's goals, one's objectives, and the probability of achieving them. And so I think he brings a very experienced and thoughtful assessment to the extent of U.S. Interventions abroad. Not that he rules them out, he's not an isolationist certainly, but that he's aware of the fact that even sometimes the best intention interventions don't always turn out as one would hope. And I think that's something, perspective he shared with President Obama, which is why I think they were such a good team together. And I think it's that sense of caution, not ruling things in, not ruling things out, but just that kind of sense of, you know, questioning hard about whether, what are the goals and whether the means proposed are likely to achieve them.
And you may not want to hazard a guess on this, but I do want to ask it on this point. Do you think it's possible to say that President Biden is going to be as unlikely to commit U.S. troops in an armed conflict as was President Trump? President Trump was not too keen on that.
You know, I think it's hard to generalize because I think that you have to take it case by case, and it's hard to predict what the circumstances are going to be. I mean, the frequency with which you do it depends some on your overall orientation, your strategic orientation, your belief in the value of intervention, but some of it depends on what the circumstances present. And so, you have situations like, the first President Bush, who I don't think anybody had anticipated, clearly the administration hadn't anticipated Saddam's intervention into Kuwait. And yet he was a president who was not a strong interventionist who ended up organizing a big international response because of the circumstances. So I think it's hard to generalize without knowing the context in which the issue of an intervention might arise.
I'm Grant Reher. You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and I'm speaking with former Deputy Secretary of State Jim Steinberg. So let's think about the transition now and the transition team. What do you think will be the first order things that Biden's transition team will be trying to figure out for the new president to do and to address in the international realm? How do they set up kind of a priority list of what the order of the agenda is?
Well, I think part of it is the agenda that the president-elect laid out during the campaign, the kinds of the priorities that he identified and the early opportunities to signal the overall approach of the administration. And without being highly specific about the things that he might do, we've certainly seen indications that things like rejoining the Paris Climate Treaty is going to be a priority for President-elect Biden, that both from the campaign and what we've heard since, the climate is a central issue. We heard that during the debates, where he came out with a very forceful defense of the need for the United States to become more involved. And given the fact that the technical withdrawal of the United States from the Paris Agreement is taking place right now, that's something that he could do early. And I would expect that's something he would do early. We might see things like re-engaging with the World Health Organization, another place where President Trump made a very dramatic statement. I think everybody recognizes that there are problems with the WHO, particularly in how it handled the initial response to COVID in China. But I think the inclination of a Biden administration is going to be to be in there and to fix it rather than to walk away from it.
Do you think that he will make any early efforts to reach out to the NATO countries or perhaps even to arrange some sort of visit with them? That has come up in the debates as well.
I have no doubt that a very early sign of the new Biden administration will be to recommit to the importance of our traditional partners and allies, as I said before, because they share both our interests and our values, and that's been very important to Mr. Biden all through his career. Whether he'll do a visit, I think, would be more uncertain, not because he wouldn't be inclined in that direction, but doing a presidential visit during the time of COVID, both because of the need for him to be here and focus on that, and the extraordinary problems associated with travel right now. I don't want to say no, but it's hard to imagine that travel and the kind of large contingent that a president requires is going to be something that happens. Now, whether there'd be a virtual meeting with that seems much more plausible.
Mm. A different question now, but global surveys that have been done over the last 4 years have demonstrated, I think, pretty clearly that the United States as a country has taken a hit in our international standing and our trust and the respect that we have around the world. There are some exceptions to that, depending on the region and the particular country, but especially in the West, that seems like a pretty clear pattern. Do you think that President Biden will be able to reverse some of that decline? And if he does, how quickly do you think we would see a change in those kinds of survey results?
It's hard to be certain about these things, but I think that there's going to be a lot of goodwill internationally towards the incoming Biden administration and sort of a sense that there are real possibilities there. I think that what's happened, and frankly, the closeness of the election may temper that a bit.
Mm.
I think that certainly sophisticated observers abroad, but even I think ordinary people will understand that while Joe Biden won the election, it was a close election, which means that there wasn't a total repudiation of everything that had taken place before. And I think, again, among certainly sophisticated observers, they're going to recognize that the Congress hasn't changed much, depending on the outcomes, of course, in the Georgia runoffs. And so I think people will be hopeful. I think there'll be a sense of a possibility of a bit of a restart in a number of different directions. But I don't think it's going to be kind of giddy euphoria that expecting everything to change overnight.
I kind of remember, but correct me if I'm wrong, that when President Obama was first elected, there was kind of a giddy euphoria around the world. We really did see the impressions of the United States really skyrocket then. Is that memory correct?
It is correct. And I think the context was different at the time. Mm. I think that, there was a sense, President Obama's election was such a transformative moment, both domestically and internationally. And I think, if we cast our minds back, it really was an extraordinary statement of hope, of the kind of the possibilities of the United States. And certainly I feel personally, obviously, a great deal of hope about the incoming Biden administration, but it just doesn't have the kind of really, transformative impressions that President Obama's election really represented. So I think, in some respects, I think there was maybe an over-optimism abroad in terms of what was possible. And so it may be that the bump up for President Biden will be less, but it may be more sustainable.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Jim Steinberg. He's a former Deputy Secretary of State and former Deputy National Security Advisor. We've been discussing how foreign affairs might change under a Biden administration. Well, so let's now take a whirlwind trip around the world, and we'll stop off at different places. We'll see how far we can get. So it's a world tour with Jim Steinberg. First, let's go to the Middle East. President Trump just recently, a few days ago, announced troop withdrawals in both Afghanistan and Iraq. First, before we think about the future administration, what kind of impact do you think that withdrawal will have on the situations in those two countries?
I think we're in a very difficult place in that part of the world right now, because the long-term U.S. involvement has clearly not produced the kinds of results that the initial interventions had in mind. And yet, every time you change the situation, particularly as U.S. troops pull out, it does create vacuum, if you want to call it that, and sort of a change in the ground that can create a lot of instability in the short term. And so I think there are a lot of risks. Now, that doesn't mean it's a mistake to do it. Sometimes you have to recognize that there are short-term costs associated with these things, but the costs of the alternative are even worse. And that given the limited effectiveness of our engagement and the kind of whatever benefits we have long since started to decline, the time for a reset had come. I think the problem now is really going to be to kind of rethink both the nature of our interests and the best way to engage, and that recognizing that in these circumstances, boots on the ground are not likely to be the most effective way to achieve our results. But we do need to find a way, not simply to completely wash our hands from this. I mean, we do have interests and stakes here. And so we need to think more about what are the tools that are available to us? How do we work with others, not just by ourselves, to try to achieve those interests and to have realistic expectations?
I wonder, though, politically in here within the country, whether now that this is happening, it will be basically impossible for President Biden to go back in with more troops, that it would be tough, as you say. We've gotten to a point, I think, where it would be tough also politically to raise the number of troops there now that they're at a particular level. Does that sound right?
I don't think it's likely, unless there's a set of dramatic developments that change the interest calculation here. I mean, I do think that we've recognized the limits of what we can do with our troops there. And I think the question is more sort of how do we look to other tools that we have, diplomacy, economic partnerships with others, to achieve what are our continued and remaining interests in the region.
So another difficult country in the area, Iran, that's been a big challenge. Where might you anticipate those relations going? Is it too late now to rejoin the nuclear agreement, for example?
You know, I don't want to speculate specifically on what the Biden administration will do, but I do think that on the one hand, you know, there were significant benefits to the agreement that was reached during the Obama administration. And clearly, Vice President Biden was very involved in that, and many of his close advisors were involved. And so I think there's going to be a serious effort to look to see what can be done. But, you know, like the river is flowing down, the water is never the same. And so it will require a relook at where we are now. And so I don't think you can just sort of kind of re-roll the clock and go back to where we were and just say, let's just pretend this never happened. Things have happened, things have changed. And so it will require rethinking sort of what's happened, what has Iran done since then, what things might be needed to adjust or amend or accommodate those changes. But I do think that certainly it would be surprising if the Biden administration didn't look to re-engage diplomatically, especially with our partners, because it does go to this broad theme, which will be so important to President Biden, which is we're stronger when we work with others. And our effectiveness in dealing with Iran during the Obama-Biden administration before was precisely that we were able to build this coalition, not just with our European partners, but even with Russia and China.
So another set of countries, and one in particular here that is the center of this, but President Trump has claimed some progress in the never-ending peace process regarding Israel and its neighbors, and also regarding Arabs living in Israel. President Obama, I think it's fair to say, had a difficult relationship with Prime Minister Netanyahu. Any idea of where those issues might be headed now on the heels of the Trump administration?
You know, I think it's a complicated situation. I think the overall improvement in Israel's relations with many of its Arab neighbors is a welcome development. It's been supported on a bipartisan basis. It's been a long time in coming. We saw it much more dramatically and openly in the last days of the Trump administration. But these are developments that have long been in train, and that it isn't even sort of under the surface. It's been pretty close to the surface that many of the Arab governments have been building stronger ties with Israel. And I think on the whole, that's a positive development. I think that it creates greater stability in the region, reduces the chance of war, and helps deal with the problem of Iran, which is a very serious problem in which has been part of the motivation for many of these Arab governments to get closer to Israel. So I would be surprised if that wasn't something that President Biden would want to continue to work with. I don't want to guess as to where and how the Biden administration would proceed on the Palestinian issue. It's a very difficult issue. Again, it's one of those things where you can't just sort of say, well, let's go back to where we were 4 or 8 years ago. Events on the ground change the possibilities and the obstacles. And so I think it's something that the Biden administration will need to take a close look at and see, you know, where we are, what the possibilities are. I would not, though, presume that there will be a difficult relationship between Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Biden. They have a long relationship and association over the years. President Biden's been a strong supporter of Israel and Israel's security. And so, you know, those core shared interests, I think, will provide a strong basis for the relationship.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is Jim Steinberg. Well, let's move to an area where your expertise is even deeper. President Obama talked about a pivot to Asia and U.S. focus and attention. You were part of that. And President Trump certainly has given Asia a lot of his attention in a different kind of way. Let's talk about how relations in Asia might change under a Biden administration. And let's start with arguably the biggest challenge in the region, China. Where do you see the relations going there?
You know, I think certainly as we look at the international landscape, in addition to these very important transnational issues like climate and COVID and public health, there's certainly no more important issue than the U.S. relationship with China and the evolution of the political, economic, and security environment in Asia. This is a situation which will require great deference. China has become a much deeper challenge for the United States. as China has become stronger, it's raised deep questions about what China's long-term intentions are, how it's going to deal with its neighbors, what its goals and objectives are, whether it's prepared to work with others and to achieve its own goals in ways that don't harm the interests of others, or whether it's just going to try to use its clout to get its way, irrespective of the interests of others. And so we've seen a much more assertive China over the last decade, much more willing to push its own agenda and seemingly less interested in responding and being responsive to the concerns of others. And I think there's no doubt that the Biden administration is going to take that challenge very seriously and demonstrate that the United States is prepared to stand up for our interests and the interests of our friends and allies, and that it's prepared to work with China if China is prepared to respect others, but that the Biden administration is not going to shy away from taking on China if China chooses a different path.
And of course, another big challenge in the region is North Korea. That saw some pretty high tension interactions with the Trump administration, and some strange ones as well. Where do you see that headed?
Well, we haven't heard a lot during the course of the campaign about the North Korea problem. And I think the thing that one has to keep in mind is that every time the North Korea issue appears to slip off the front of the international agenda, the North Koreans have an inclination to try to get themselves back on the front page. And so I think I'm confident that the people involved in the transition and President-elect Biden himself are paying close attention to the possibilities that North Korea will try to reclaim center stage even before President Biden is inaugurated or shortly thereafter. I certainly remember in our own case that when President Obama was elected, we had hoped to try to rebuild some momentum in terms of looking for diplomatic efforts to resolve the issues with North Korea after a somewhat difficult time in the Bush administration. And despite the outreach by President Obama and his team, we saw within a few months after President Obama took office some serious provocations by North Korea with missile and nuclear testing. So I would be concerned that North Korea will try to kind of up the stakes and ante to try to get the attention of the new administration. And I think that will potentially pose an early challenge. But I'm confident, given the experience that they've all had, that they're working through this and have some thoughts about how they intend to proceed.
I wanted to squeeze in Russia and the Americas, but you just said something that scared me, and I want to follow up on that. We've got about 3 minutes left or so. But if North Korea does engage in this kind of behavior that you see may be possible to, get back on the international stage and sort of, get to the front of the attention, and they do that, and it does that during the last days of the Trump administration, the president's behavior in the recent weeks being just focused on these lawsuits, that seems like a pretty dangerous combination if North Korea does that before the Biden administration takes office on January 20th.
Well, you're right, Grant. I mean, it is, there are some considerable benefits to the fact that we have, compared to every other country, a long transition between the election of a new leader and they're actually taking office. It gives them a chance to get ready and to be well prepared on day one. But on the other hand, it creates this awkward situation where for a period of several months where you have an outgoing president who is leaving office and doesn't have a mandate but has the authority to deal with a crisis, and an incoming president who has the mandate but not yet the authority to take action. And we've had to deal with this in a variety of ways through much of our history. Going back, we can think about the Depression and the transition between Hoover and FDR and some of the difficult problems of President Hoover trying to make some decisions about U.S. policy, knowing that FDR was going to go in a different direction. So it is a difficult time. And I would certainly hope that despite all the political differences and the back and forth and the contestations that President Trump and his advisors would recognize in a situation like that, there needs to be really a close consultation and understanding between the president and the president-elect and his team to make sure that foreigners and especially potential adversaries don't take advantage of that period.
Well, we've only got about a minute left. I want to ask a different kind of question than the Americas and Russia. We might come back to that on another program, perhaps. But is there a country or a region or a particular problem, for that matter, that we have not talked about that you think may be a potential new significant challenge and will test President Biden's international acumen? Maybe impossible to predict that, but is there one in your head that's kind of circling the back of your mind?
You know, I think that there are many things, and it's, you know, I in my earlier days, among the many jobs I had, I was head of policy planning during the Clinton administration, during the first Clinton term, and one spends a lot of time trying to think about the things that you didn't think about, right? And those are things that always surprise you, and try to figure out how do you imagine what they might be. I do think that because of the all the uncertainties around COVID, we have to worry about how those who don't wish us well might try to take advantage of this time. And I'm not going to spell out some of the scenarios I think our listeners can imagine, but I do think it's a time to be aware of the potential vulnerabilities and fragilities that we all have right now. And as I say, I'm sure that the incoming team is thinking about these things as well. But to recognize that sometimes when you're focused on one thing, that, as you say, there are other issues and others will try to take advantage of that, and to try to keep your peripheral vision and make sure that while paying all the effort and attention you need to the immediate crisis, the health crisis, the economic crisis, and the like, that we don't find somebody who tries to take advantage of that focus to cause us great difficulty.
I have to leave it there. That was Jim Steinberg. Jim, I want to thank you so much for talking with me. I always learn a ton from you, and I want to thank you for your public service and wish good health to you and your family.
Thanks, Grant. It's a great pleasure to be on your terrific program.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.